Welcome to Next Level Healing. I'm your host, Dr. Tara Perry. For 25 years, I've helped professionals, first responders, celebrities, Olympians, teachers, moms, dads, and people just like you achieve their results better and faster than they thought possible. This is where measurable modern science meets the quantum. We're so glad you're here. Let's dive right in. Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Next Level Healing. I'm your host, Dr. Tara Perry, and I am so excited today. We have our guest, Sharon Hewitt-Rollett. She is a philosopher and writer who studies extraordinary experiences and what they tell us about consciousness and the deeper nature of the world we live in. She has a PhD in philosophy from New York University and taught for 2 years at Brandeis University before leaving academia for a career as an independent writer and researcher. Her books include The Source and Significance of Consciousness, a subject I'm nuts about, and Beyond Death, The Best Evidence for Survival of Human Consciousness. That's the essay that in 2021 won a prize at the Bigelow Institute for the Consciousness Studies Essay Contest. Sharon has since served on the board of the Bigelow Institute and just recently founded the Mind and Meaning Institute, dedicated to pursuing scientific and philosophical research on life's big questions. Welcome to Next Level Healing, Sharon.
Thank you so much for having me, Tara. I'm looking forward to it.
So I love your books. I love the subjects that you're interested in. I just the whole idea that that we're in the middle of this giant paradigm shift is so exciting. What's your bird's eye view about that paradigm shift? You've been in this world for a very long time. What is your reaction to how the public is shifting and changing as they come into this new understanding of what we are?
Well, I'm very surprised, actually. So I started out, you know, in academia. It was about 20 years ago when I was getting my PhD. And I was already interested in some questions about consciousness, more like philosophy level, not so much extraordinary experience or paranormal phenomena at that time. I didn't really think that there was much to that. But at the time, I was very interested in this question of like, what is consciousness and how does it affect the world? Like, how do our minds affect our bodies? Like, where is the mind and the brain, and how does it, you know, control our actions or behavior? Is there free will? How does all of that work? And I was really interested in the philosophy of panpsychism at the time, which is this idea that everything is conscious. Everything that we tend to think of as just physical or material actually has sort of an interiority to it. And very few people, at least in my circles in philosophy, were interested in that at the time. It was not the fashion. It was just kind of a far out view. And that probably contributed to my leaving philosophy. So that was 20 years ago, and I was really astonished to see over these past 20 years, those views that I was really interested in back then and nobody else was, becoming much more visible within philosophy and within the culture at large. So now you hear about panpsychism from not just philosophers, but in the general public. You're reading like popular books about consciousness that are talking about panpsychism, even talking about cosmopsychism, the idea that the entire cosmos is a mind and that we are part of that giant mind. So there has really been this big shift. And so far, I feel like within, you know, mainstream philosophy and science, there's still not much openness to mystical experience, to near-death experience, to contact with loved ones who have passed on. I mean, that's really beyond the pale still. But I'm encouraged by how far the mainstream has come in the last 20 years, that in the next 20 years, we might get closer to that. There seem to be more and more people, even within mainstream academia and science, who, while they're not going to say it publicly, behind closed doors, they'll tell you some really interesting experiences that they've had that have made them start really questioning what the ultimate nature of our reality is. And I think it's just a matter of time before more of them are willing to speak out publicly about that.
Why do you think that is, that in spite of overwhelming science, for example, we had Mark Gober on the show who wrote An End to Upside Down Thinking. He did such a great job of quantifying all these paranormal activities and how the p-values are just bulletproof. And, you know, it's one in a billion billion that this could be anything other than what it apparently is. Why do you think it's so slow to be recognized in academia?
Well, I think it challenges everything about the way we do science and the way that we as a general secular culture think about the world that we live in. Even though we may have our private opinions about these things, and many people are privately spiritual or privately religious and have their own convictions about this, but we have this sort of understanding that, well, in the scientific sphere, in the academic sphere, we're going to put that stuff aside and we're just going to talk about the material world, the physical world.
And what was it that shifted your viewpoint on this? Because you said when you first were in this area, you didn't take all that stuff seriously, but then something shifted your thinking on this.
Hey guys, studies are showing that 68% of people that watch podcasts regularly don't click the subscribe button. Do me a huge favor. If you like this content, click subscribe so other people know where to go for the cool stuff. Thank you.
Yeah, so... So I grew up religious, and so I was taught that these things were real, but then through college and university, I didn't see evidence for them. So I was like, yeah, I'd like to believe that's true. That would be very comforting if there was a God and there was, you know, this like cool spiritual layer to the world, but I didn't see any evidence of that. It seemed like the atheists were right. But then it was about 5 years. Well, right after I left academia, I started to have some little experiences. My main area of specialty now is the study of coincidence and synchronicity. So I had these little experiences that were like, that seems a little too meaningful to be just chance, but maybe it is. And so, but I started wondering and I started researching this stuff. And then it was about 5 years into my interest in this that I had an experience that was so just impossible to explain by chance. I mean, the probability of it was so minute. It involved a GPS on a phone locating me not where I was, which was in Pennsylvania at the time, but across the Atlantic.
Yeah, do tell the story. It's a wonderful story.
All right, let me give you the whole story. Okay. So back at this time, I had had a really difficult breakup with a man that I was engaged to be married to, a Frenchman. We were going to settle in France, in Brittany, France, together there. And then some very difficult things came along and that relationship broke up. But it was a very long process of recovering from that. And during that time, we stopped speaking to one another. That was part of what we needed for our own sanity. And several years into that, I got to this place in my life where I was really, in order to move on, like I felt like I needed some kind of closure there. I needed to know what was going on with him, but I didn't feel like I could ask. I didn't want it. That would open a whole other can of worms. But there was a lot going on for me emotionally at this time. So during that period, I was out in the mountains of Pennsylvania with some friends, and we were in an area that we didn't know, and we were trying to find a grocery store. And so finally, the friend that I was riding with, she just asked her cell phone to find us the nearest grocery stores. And then she handed her phone to me because she was driving the car. And so when she handed me the phone, it was showing a list of like 5 or 6 grocery stores in Pennsylvania where we were. And I tapped the button map because I wanted to see them in Map form to figure out which one would be the easiest to get to. So I hit Map, and the phone, you know, thinks for like 30 seconds because we're out in the boonies. It doesn't have very good connection. And then it loads this map that has these French town names on it. And there was only one town name that I recognized specifically about it. I couldn't remember where in France it was. I was just like, okay, these are all French town names. And after each French town name, it had the name of a French grocery store chain, Eau Leclerc. So I was just a little bit freaked out by this. I handed the phone back to my friend. I was like, your phone thinks that we're in France. I don't know what to do with this. The emotion was kind of high at that moment. I had no idea what was going on. She had no idea what was going on. She said she'd never used her phone to look up anything in France. She didn't know what it was doing. She pressed a button and it went back to behaving totally normally. Found grocery stores in Pennsylvania. We went to them. So a few days later, I get home and I'm thinking about this event and I'm thinking about that town. I'm like, I'm going to see if it really is in France. Like maybe it was like just in French Canada and like it's not that big a coincidence. I look up this town on the internet. And it's not only in France, but it's in Brittany, the region where my ex and I lived. And when I see that it's in Brittany, I just have like, there's just like this conviction that comes over me that, well, if the coincidence was already this huge, this town must have something to do with like where my ex was on that day. But again, I didn't want to contact him. So I just Googled his name and that date to see if there might be some kind of information online. And lo and behold, he has a blog that had a page that listed some events that he was going to be attending that year. One of them was that very day, and it was in a town that when I Googled it was 2 miles from the grocery store that I had seen on that map.
Crazy.
So if indeed he was in that town where he said he was going to be at that time, and he had asked his phone to find the nearest grocery stores, he would have seen the map that I saw on my phone in Pennsylvania.
And how did that bring you closure with that relationship? Because that's such an extraordinary story.
Well, it took a little while, first of all. That was a huge coincidence, but it took about 5 more weeks of these other coincidences, just one after another, hammering this point home, being like, look, you need to do something about this, like just kind of ramping up that emotion. And finally, I just was like, okay, I will write to him, like, just come what may, I'll find out what's going on. And it turned out that I think it was about 10 days after that GPS event, he actually had had his first child. So he had gotten married and he had a child with this woman. And it was really this amazing, it was an amazing moment of closure. Like I got that closure that I needed to say, okay, we've each gone our separate ways. We're happy in our separate places. Everything has worked out the way it was intended. But I also got this moment of getting to share in this huge milestone in his life of this child. And I mean, he didn't say this, but I could imagine that, you know, when this was happening for him, like it's something that he would have liked to share with me, but didn't feel that he could. And so this coincidence enabled us to connect at that particular moment and share that happy moment in his life. And it was immensely healing for me.
So it feels like the universe source wanted this occurrence to happen. So it kind of dropped all these clues. Is that kind of
that's exactly what it felt like? Yeah. It also feels like, you know, it wasn't just the universe wanted it to happen, but like that there was a part of me and a part of him that wanted that to happen. And there were all of these rational barriers that we had to it happening. But that coincidence just kind of almost intensified the emotion to a point and sort of made it real in this external way where I couldn't deny that like something important was going on. Like I was seeing it on this phone. It's like, there is this connection to France and to this person. I can't deny that. And that connection wanted to sort of bring itself into being and into closure, I think, at that moment.
So this seems to be like a wildly popular
area, because it seems like in spiritual circles, when there are coincidences, and it seems like the more you get into the spiritual work, you know, the more you get into heart and brain coherence, the more you get spiritually aligned, coincidences just seem to happen more and more. Can you speak to that? Because it's just kind of a cool byproduct of living in flow.
Yeah. Well, so one thing I think is that everybody experiences coincidences a little bit differently, like, because it really depends, I think, on your psychological state, your psychological needs, what it is, because the coincidences are a way for you to see that your mind and your soul and heart, your emotions, are not isolated within your brain, right? They are part of the wider world. And that wider world is aware of what you're thinking and feeling and responding to that. And so as you, well, again, it depends on where you're coming from. So for myself, I personally have often a difficult time acknowledging difficult emotions that I feel like we probably, a lot of us have this. But I'm a particularly like analytical person. I'd much rather like stay up in my brain, like intellectualizing things. I don't want to have to deal with messy emotions. And coincidences tend to come along in order to force me to take stock of those emotions and to actually connect me to my own heart, connect my mind and my brain to each other. And they do that through the external world.
Do you have some examples for either yourself or people that you've worked with that are just make that kind of clear to other people what's going on?
Yeah. So one of the stories that I love to tell has to do with the period right after I left academia. And part of the reason I like to tell this story is because it shows the ambiguity of coincidences and the necessity for interpreting them, that they don't, because a lot of times in sort of the popular spiritual literature, there's this idea, okay, yeah, coincidences will come along and synchronicities will sort of guide you along your path. And sometimes that's true. I mean, I think that the GPS event that I had was definitely a kind of guidance, but it's not quite as simple as that, because some coincidences come along and they're actually a kind of test. So right after I left academia, maybe 6 months later, I was starting to have second thoughts. I was starting to wonder if I had, you know, maybe left too soon, like having some financial worries. And it was right after the time of year when you can apply for new academic jobs. At least in philosophy, there's like this 1 month window in October and November when you can apply for these jobs, and then the window closes and jobs won't be available for another year. It's at least tenure track jobs. So I thought, like, this window had just closed. I was like, I'm going to go look at what jobs were advertised this year. And if there weren't any good jobs, then I'll feel like I made the right decision in leaving academia. Well, I went and I looked at the jobs, and in fact, there was like the perfect job. There was this job in my home state of Virginia, in the most beautiful part of the state, in the Blue Ridge Mountains. It was in my area of specialty. And the weirdest thing was that, unlike all the other jobs that were advertised, this one had a deadline that was still in the future. It was like 2 weeks away, so I could actually apply for it. So I see this ad, I'm like, okay, I guess this is a sign that, you know, I was supposed to apply for another job. I guess I should apply for this. So I put together all my application materials, and I needed to actually send them to my alma mater, New York University, so that they could send them on to the university with the reference letters. And it happened that the precise time when I needed to get those materials to NYU, I had planned a trip to New York that very weekend. And so I was like, okay, well, I mean, that works out perfectly. I'll just take them up there by hand and give them to them at the office. Except when I got to New York, I could not bring myself to take the stuff to NYU. I kept avoiding the office. I did all this other stuff in New York, but I couldn't take them into the office. So my final morning in New York, I'm sitting eating breakfast and looking out the window of my friend's apartment. And this is in Lower Manhattan, so the streets are very close together. So there's the other building is very close, and it's full of offices, people working at their desks. And I saw this, and it just sort of reminded me of working in my office at Brandeis University, which Brandeis is a wonderful place. I can't think of a better place to work in academia. But just the idea of being back in an office all day, I was just like, I just can't do it. And I came to this point where I was like, I don't care what the coincidences are telling me. I'm not applying for this job. I don't want it. So I put those application materials away and I went out and, you know, with a clear conscience, just went about my day. But there's this interesting little coda to this story, which is that evening. Well, so there's one other thing I should tell you. Like a lot of people, I have a coincidence number, a number that tends to show up at important moments of my life. And for me, it's the number 33. So that evening, or that whole day, actually, I was seeing like 33 in different places around the city. And I told my friend that I was staying with about this. And then we start walking back to his apartment, and he starts telling me about this building because he's an architectural journalist. He's like, this building was built by so-and-so. And I'm looking at the building. I'm like, that looks like the building that I saw outside of your window this morning. And he said, oh, yeah, that is. You can see that right across the street from my apartment. And we walk up closer, and there's a little plaque with the address of this building, and it's 33 Maiden Lane. So I was thinking about this coincidence afterward. I was like, what does this mean? Like I thought the synchronicities were saying I should apply for this job, and then I don't. And then they seem to confirm that was a good thing. What's going on? And the way I've come to interpret that for myself is that I was going through this period of doubt and questioning, and the universe provided the perfect academic job. Like if I had wanted to go back into academia, this would have been exactly the kind of job that I would have wanted. And that gave me the opportunity to understand, to feel in myself, that even if I had the best possible opportunity, I did not want to take it. And so I could move on with absolutely no regrets about leaving academia at that point.
Yeah, amazing clarity.
Yeah. But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the events themselves that contained that clarity. They provided me the opportunity to find the clarity within myself. I think that's beautiful. What a lot of our synchronicities do. They're helping us to tune in to what we should already know, what is in our intuition.
Fantastic. And in your book, what would you say are two or three of the most synchronistic events that your audience has just gone, wow, that learning of this story has made such a big difference for me? You know, I can totally relate to that. Can you give us some examples of synchronicities like that?
Oh, my goodness. There are hundreds and hundreds. So one of the ones that always comes back, it is not necessarily because sort of the healing capacity of it. This one particularly is more of it has more of a wow factor and more of like, oh, how do these things work? Like, how is this even possible? So this is something that happened to another coincidence researcher named Kirby Surprise. Which that's his real name.
What a great name.
I mean, for a coincidence researcher, it's a crazy name. But yes. So he actually writes a lot about how we create coincidences for ourselves, not in the sense of like, you know, you start noticing stuff that was already there, but actually like in a very active sense of like almost like psychokinesis, like you influencing the world to cause things to happen. So, well, I was going to say, I think his work is really important. It's a really important counterbalance to theories of synchronicity where it's all, you know, God or it's all the universe giving you messages. He is very clear about the way in which these events reflect back to you your own thoughts and feelings. And you have to be aware of that. It's not always, you know, some higher intelligence. Sometimes you're just looking in a mirror when you're looking at these events. So anyway, back to his story. So he talks about this time where he was sitting in a car waiting to pick up a friend, and he was listening to the radio, and this was back in the 80s, and the movie Carrie, the Stephen King movie Carrie, had just come out, and he's hearing an ad for it on the radio, and he'd actually already seen the movie, so he knew that in the movie, Carrie has these psychokinetic abilities where she actually destroys her family's house at the end of the movie. And so he's listening to this, and he's also thinking about this National Enquirer article that he, or like just the headline that he had recently seen somewhere about somebody, you know, using their mind to tip a house over. So he's sitting there thinking about this, and he looks across the street from the parking lot, and there's this little house sitting there, and he's like, I wonder what it would be like to tip over that house with my mind. And as he is thinking this, the house begins to roll toward him. Like the roof of the house comes down on its side. So now he's looking at the roof and he's freaking out. I mean, this, I mean, what the heck? So he's a very brave man. And even as he's freaking out, he says, okay, well, if that's real, if I just did that, then I want to see that house crushed just like it was in the movie. And the roof of the house begins to implode. And as it implodes, from the back of it, he sees this yellow bulldozer start to creep up over the top of it. So it was behind the house, hidden from his view this entire time. And I guess, you know, he's in the car with the radio on, so he, you know, and in a city. So he doesn't notice that there's this sound of this heavy equipment over there working. So the whole event has this very like normal explanation. The house was being demolished, but he had no idea of that when he made that wish. And somehow the universe had him make that wish at precisely the right place to be able to have the experience of what it would be like to do this, even though anybody else, you know, on the block, they don't see anything weird going on. It's only him who feels this enormous paranormal feeling through the event.
That's amazing.
And I, what I love about it is that it shows precisely what a coincidence is, because it's this thing that for the person experiencing it, the way that this outer event aligns with your inner thoughts and emotions is so precise in some of these cases, and just so improbable, you know, by chance, that you know that something paranormal has taken place. And yet, to onlookers, there's nothing special. It's going, you know, just a bulldozer knocking over a house. Like, and
have you had a lot of people reach out to you and write stories as a result of reading your book and go, oh my goodness, you know, it reminded me that this sort of thing happened in my life?
Yeah. Yeah, it's tapered off a little bit. The book came out about 5 years ago, so it's tapered off a bit. But yeah, it's very interesting to find out, you know, this thing happens to everybody all of the time, I think. But it's very easy, especially when you're caught in that, the physicalist, materialist mindset. It's very easy to ignore them. And that's happened even to me. I honestly, while I was writing this enormous book on coincidences, I totally forgot one of the weirdest, most amazing coincidences that had happened to me in my life. It had happened like 10 years before. It was like so weird that it just kind of happened. I didn't know what to make of it, and I just forgot about it. And it wasn't until years after writing that book that it popped back into my mind. I was like, oh, like this weird thing happened. And so I do think that when people read about coincidences, it starts to jog a lot of memories for them, at least if, you know, if they're minimally open to this idea. They start to remember some of those weird things that have happened to them in the past and that they didn't have a place to put. Because I think a lot of times we forget these things because we don't have a way to categorize them. They don't connect to anything else that we know about the world. Even for those of us who study synchronicity, who study extraordinary experiences, who have some awareness of the spiritual world, some of these events are just so weird and off the wall that we just don't know what to do with them. I've given you some examples from my own life that have, you know, I've come to have some understanding of what they mean for me. But then there are other coincidences on my life and other people's lives where I feel like there is no neat explanation. And what do you do with that? You know, you just sit with it for years, decades.
Well, like you say, it's kind of a mirror. So if you kind of look into the mirror and just sort of contemplate it, does an answer arrive? Do you come to some understanding like, oh, yes, that makes sense?
I think that generally does happen. Especially for the more improbable coincidences, I feel like the really highly charged ones that are obviously something that's not just your imagination or just chance, I think that those do seem to take some sort of meaningful form over the years. Other ones, so for instance...
Well, it's interesting. There's a major history writer that is one of those writers that makes half fact and half fiction. I think it may be Gore Vidal, but he says at the beginning of his book that if you read something and it couldn't possibly have happened, that actually did happen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, history is kind of fraught with some amazing coincidences that just seem that it just couldn't possibly have happened.
Yeah.
But it did.
Well, it's true. And it's funny. Some of the reactions to my coincidence book, the sort of introductory chapter and the first chapter about, you know, can chance explain these things is like very... I think it's very friendly to people who have a more materialistic mindset. But then I dive into those weirder events that happen. And a lot of people at that point, they're just like, oh, no, that couldn't have happened. Like, they're like, why do you believe these people that say that this happened to them? And I think it's really important not to write things off just because they seem too weird to be true. Like you said, because... reality is weird sometimes. It really is. And if we want to understand, or at least understand better, the world that we live in, we have to stop putting on blinders and only accept the things that make sense to us. Because there's a lot of the world out there that we can't make sense of yet.
Well, like Carl Sagan, when he was putting down, I don't know, telekinesis, telepathy, these paranormal things. And then the researcher who he was putting down said, well, did you read my stuff? And he's like, well, no, I didn't have to because I just know it's not real.
Have to.
And the guy says, well, why don't you read it first and then put it down? And then when he read it, he's like, oh, my goodness, this actually is real. I have to pay attention to this.
Yeah.
So was Source and Significance of Coincidence your first book or your second book?
It was actually my second book. My first book was didn't have to do with extraordinary experience. It was a philosophy book. But the Source and Significance of Coincidence is my first book dealing with extraordinary experience.
And then how much after that did you write Beyond Death?
That was 2 years later.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'd love for you to share some of those amazing stories because, I mean, the telephone ringing and getting a phone call from somebody that passed away.
Yeah.
And you said
there were three
books written about electronic things doing weird stuff when somebody's passed away, because maybe that's an avenue with which they connect to the living. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. So this is one of the most fascinating experiences. Telephone calls from the dead or phantom phone calls, different people call it different things. This is one of those things that I feel like even people who research, you know, near-death experience or even research, you know, evidence for survival after death, they start hearing about, you know, people getting phone calls from their dead loved ones, and they're like, no, we can't believe this stuff. But it happens amazingly often. Like, there have only been, at this point, three books that I know of that have been dedicated to this topic, two in English, one in French. But the weird thing is that when I was doing the research for my coincidence book and just like reading anything I could get my hands on that had any connection to coincidences, I just kept finding people talking about getting a phone call from their deceased loved one. So it was just over and over in all these places, these people who had no idea that this had happened to anyone else, but they're telling about their own experience. And then as I began to meet more people, I had people from my hometown, right, telling me, oh yeah, that happened to a friend of mine. Or, you know, so now I know several people personally who have had this happen to them. And
typically, what is that phone call like? I mean, is there an actual voice at the other end? Is the conversation go on for a while? You know, what is the nature of those phone calls?
It varies. So sometimes you'll get people who will just get a phone call that says it's coming from their loved one's phone. Okay, so the deceased person's phone, which doesn't have a battery anymore, doesn't have service anymore, it's turned off, it's under a bed somewhere, so there's no way that it could be calling them, but yet the caller ID is saying that it's coming from them. But then when they pick up, there's nobody there. So that happens quite often. But then you have a lot of cases, and the ones that I was just talking about, all of these are cases where people actually heard a voice and actually had a conversation. So there was some back and forth. I would say, and this is just a rough estimate, I would say probably in 50 to 75% of the cases, you'll hear the voice of the person on the phone and they'll say maybe a sentence or two sentences, and then you won't be able to communicate with them. Like, the line will go dead.
So, and typically, what's the nature of that? I from having read your book, I know it's things like, you know, I'm great, don't worry about me, something of that nature.
Yeah, it's usually something like, I'm okay, don't worry. You know, if something difficult is going on in their life, they might say, you know, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. But then sometimes there are actually very detailed messages that will, like, so I have a friend who got a phone call, which actually it's interesting too, because sometimes the messages aren't ultimately destined for the person who picks up the phone. In some cases, like, it'll be a neighbor who gets the phone call and then they'll relay the message to the person that it's for. So one of my friends, she got a phone call. It was from her deceased aunt, but the aunt had a message for her mom, so the aunt's sister. And it was basically like, you know, you've mourned me enough, like, you need to move on with your life. Then in other cases, they can be even more detailed, and sometimes, like, provide new information that can then be verified, like locations of important things, family secrets, sometimes, like, they're just like, yeah, it can be very detailed.
I remember one story, and I'm sorry, I don't remember where I read it, but somebody was given instructions to, like, go into the wall and find.
Yeah, so that was a dream case. It was not a mutual dream case exactly, but so this fellow had died, and two different people who had a connection to him had the same dream about him. And there were, like, these very precise details. Like, they saw him standing on this lawn with this little picket fence and a sign next to him that said, at peace with Jesus. Like, the most. So it's a very precise sort of dream. But one of the people, in addition to seeing that, heard him tell him that he needed to go to his widow and tell the widow that he had stashed money inside the wall of their house. And he gave very precise instructions about, like, it's down this hallway, it's above the light switch, you know, whatever. And they went and they found several thousand dollars that nobody knew that this guy had had, but that he had put in the wall and was very helpful to his widow. So yeah.
And your book is loaded with veridical experiences. Like, you know, it's one thing if one person just has you know, you could argue it's a hallucination or something.
Right.
But when two people have the same hallucination, it's very, you know, it's veridical. It's, you can't explain that any other way.
Yeah. And not only do you have like two living people who will have this experience, but one of the things that I think is really important evidentially is reciprocal phenomena. So somebody might have a dream of a deceased loved one, and then later, so I mean, this opens a whole other can of worms, but later a young child will have a memory of being that deceased person in a past life, and they will have a memory of communicating with that person in a dream after they died. So I don't know how much you've talked about reincarnation or reincarnation research on your show.
A bit. Mark Gober was on and we talked about, you know, those children that have full recollections
okay.
of previous
so, yes.
lifetimes. We've covered it a bit and
good.
A lot of near-death experience. So,
yeah.
you know, people that have gone out and had more real than real experiences, and a lot of those being veridical in nature where they were able to see things
yes.
or understand things that they otherwise wouldn't have known.
Yeah. Okay, good. So your readers are, or your listeners are familiar with that. And so a lot of these cases where, well, not a lot of these cases, but some cases where children have memories of having lived previous lives, they also have a memory of what's called the intermission period between when they died in the previous life and were reborn. And in some of those cases, they have these memories of communicating from the other side, whether it was in a dream, whether it was as an apparition, like appearing like a ghost to their loved ones, or even like physically affecting things, behaving like a poltergeist. And then people can verify that, yes, those things did happen after that person died. And in near-death experience cases, too, we have some of those reciprocal phenomena, because you have near-death experiencers who remember during their near-death experience appearing to somebody else, you know, going to some other location and appearing and communicating with somebody else. And then that person has also the experience of having seen that apparition and receiving that message from them. So those kinds of events really show that, yeah, when you get a telephone call from a deceased person, when you, you know, see an apparition or you have a dream of your loved one, it's not just wishful thinking, or it's not always wishful thinking, because there are these cases where somebody remembers doing that communicating, being that apparition.
So after having written Beyond Death, The Best Evidence for Survival of Human Consciousness, collecting all these stories, I love that you have it on Audible and that you read it in your voice, because I always love to hear the author speaking. What is your passion now? What is the thing that you most want people to know and to understand?
My passion now is the concept of destiny. So what I have seen through all of my coincidence work and through, you know, generally talking to near-death experiencers and people who have intuitive abilities, is that there seems to be a plan for our lives. Right. And a lot of near-death experiencers talk about this, you know, they come back having some knowledge that they have a mission or there's a specific plan. Or they talk in terms of a soul contract, something that they're here to do. And when I look at coincidences in people's lives as well, they seem to be aligning in such a way as to help move people along to a certain life trajectory. And so I'm fascinated to interview more people about this, because I feel like there hasn't been that much in-depth work on, like, there's a lot of writing in you know, in New Age circles and in spirituality books about this idea of a soul contract, but as far as, you know, rigorous research and data collection, there hasn't been any. And I really want to dive into that and try to document this phenomenon and document people's awareness of their destiny or their life plan, ways in which they're sort of given foreknowledge of things that they are destined for, things that are coming up in their life, and then the way that events in their lives align in order to make those things happen.
Fantastic. I love it. Because I think all of us can relate to the idea of feeling, I mean, gosh, I went so many years where I just felt like, in fact, I have a friend who does human design, and he kept saying to me, he says, Tara, you're the best acupuncturist I've ever been to, but this is not your human design. And I was like, yeah, I kind of know that, but it's like, I don't know what that thing is that you're describing to me is my human design. Mm. And thank God the universe, God, source just laid the path out for me so that I was able to find what I'm really excelling at, you know, which is helping people find what's blocking them in their subconscious mind and removing it and blossoming in. So, I mean, I'm just so excited that you're going down this path of helping people get in touch with their destiny, because it feels... You know, how do you live your dharma, your calling, if you, mm-hmm. you're blocked from that and you don't know what that is? So
yeah.
Do you have a book in the works
yeah.
on this?
It's not close to being a book yet. I'm really starting to do the interviews, starting out with a lot of the people that have come to me over the years with these stories and like wanting to go back and just rigorously document those stories so that I can present them in a book. But yeah, it's going to be... a couple years at least before that.
What can we do to support you in your endeavors?
Oh, send me your stories, first of all.
Okay.
Yeah, as many stories as I have, I want more. And I, especially if your listeners have stories that are related to destiny or, you know, to inklings of their lives being guided in particular ways, I would love to hear those.
So anybody that's felt guided by source, God, the universe, and how that unfolded for them, that's
yeah.
the kind of story you want to hear.
Yes.
And how long a story are you looking for? Are you looking for a page, several pages,
oh.
anything in between?
Anything. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then how would they reach out to you? How can they connect to you? We'll put
yeah.
your books in the show notes. Do you have groups of people that you, connect with or anything like that?
No, I don't run any groups right now. People can reach out to me through email. You can find my email address is sharon.rowlett@gmail.com, and you can find that on my website too. So you can Google me, Sharon Hewitt Rowlett, and on my about page you'll find all my contact information. You can find me on Facebook too.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being here and sharing your incredible wisdom and your journey connecting to source, pulling back the veil on coincidence and sharing why that's important and what that's all about. And now your current journey into destiny. Folks, this has been a conversation with Sharon Hewitt Rowlett. She is the author of The Source and Significance of Coincidence and Beyond Death, The Best Evidence for Survival of Human Consciousness. Thank you so much for being with us here today, Sharon.
Thank you very much, Tara. Thanks for your wonderful questions and all the best to you and your work.
Bye, everybody. And if you got value from this, please click subscribe and we'll see you on the next episode of Next Level Healing.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Next Level Healing. Please like, subscribe, and let us know how this helped you. How can it be even more life-changing? We love hearing from you. And if you're eager to upgrade your life, click the button here or go to consulttara.com and get your free customized GPS map. Get the coordinates for where you are now and where you want to go. Clients consistently report it's faster and easier than they thought possible. Remember, you were meant for more, and it is available to you. See you right here next week for our next episode.